Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
That's me. How are you? Once again, we're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're 18 stories above the Chicago River. Beautiful Lake Michigan and the city that never sleeps. Oh, wait, this is Chicago. In fact, speaking of Chicago. I had a question in mind for the news clip today, and I don't know if this is going to be a good news clip question or not, so maybe I'll run it by you guys before we decide to post it and ask people to vote on it. And it goes like this. You know, they got that big shutdown of Lakeshore Drive coming up. It'll start not too far from Lollapalooza and Grant Park and go all the way out to a Cubs game at Clark and Addison. And I spend a lot of time downtown. Maybe you come into the city on weekends, too. I just can't say enough good things about the city of Chicago and all of the things that it does to make it a welcoming, fun, safe, entertaining place. But I almost think that we do too much sometimes. When you consider the magnet that Millennium Park or Grant Park or the lakefront are, when they complicate traveling around there with Taste of Chicago or Lollapalooza or this fest or that fest, I begin to wonder if we aren't a little over-fested in Chicago. Because you know a great thing about Chicago is Grant Park. You don't need to, and I know we generate a lot of money and trash at Lollapalooza. And they pay us money to refix it up after Lollapalooza pretty much tears Grant Park to shreds every year. So I'm not too worried about that. But it just seems to me like there are so many times that I find myself trying to do something in Chicago, including picking my niece up at Union Station. And, oh, wait, I can't cross over Michigan Avenue or Columbus because there's a half marathon or there's a march or there's a... The marches are different, right? Those are protests and they aren't festivals. But it just seems to me like if we just dialed it back a little bit, it would be so much easier to do Chicago. Am I being a crabby old man, Violetta, here? Does this make any sense at all?
I think it makes a lot of sense. And what I would also add is I think that's the problem between the small town, big city vibe of Chicago, right? Because I think the locals are small town.
Right.
But then the city has this allure of being a big city.
Yeah.
So it's just constantly contradicting, like the big festivals and...
Well, that's funny because when I used to live outside the city of Chicago, far away in LaGrange Park, I used to hear people complain about, say, the noise at a concert at Soldier Field or Wrigley Field or something like that. And I'd go, hey, you live in the city. That's Chicago. Come on. That's what happens. Now that I live two blocks from Wrigley Field and I can hear the Foo Fighters pretty well from here, I have an appreciation for, like you said, the small town nature of a neighborhood and how I wish it wasn't so ambitious, the city sometimes. You know, when I'm not in the midst of it and I just say, wow, Chicago, let's go, Taste of Chicago, Lollapalooza, Foo Fighters, let's go.
Yeah.
And then when you actually live there, or frankly, and I'll bet I'm not alone on this, when you're just trying to get around some of that, come downtown on a Saturday afternoon, which you should do, right? I mean, it's Chicago, it's the summer, it's a Saturday. You want to do Chicago. And the place is packed up and down the Riverwalk and Michigan Avenue and State Street and stuff.
We only have 3 months to pack it all in.
And so I think that if you want to make it easiest for people to do the stuff that Chicago already has, like Grant Park will always be Grant Park. Millennium Park will always be Millennium Park. You don't need to like stage anything there. Millennium doesn't sell itself out for these purposes now that I think about it, except they have concerts in the Grand Lawn there, and that's the purpose of that. But it just seems to me like there are times where we're making it too difficult to even do the city in those precious 3 months. That's my complaint. I said before the news with Steve Bertrand that there are three items that you should recycle if you wanted to be eco-friendly and environmental. So we had some folks over the other night, and we were serving paper straws in our Aperol spritzes. And one of the people there was Eric Zorn. And he said, oh, I see you're being good and environmentally friendly. And I said, yeah, not really, but yeah, I'm glad that worked out. There aren't many dolphins in the Midwest, so I'm not sure that our use of straws here are all that bad if they're plastic, but paper is probably better than plastic, although I'm still not 100% sure of that. And then we started to talk about environmental regulations and cleaning up and stuff like that. And I started to remind the guys of a John Tierney piece that was written twice, two different times, 10 years apart, in the New York Times about environmentalism. One was called an article, The Reign of Recycling, and the other one was something like Recycling is Garbage. And in each case, he poked a lot of holes in your beliefs about it. For instance, he says that if you're in the habit of washing out that ceramic mug with some warm water and each day using the coffee cup over and over and over again, you think I'm being environmentally friendly. Better that than use a styrofoam cup from the little machine we have here every day. But he said it's better for the environment if you use a disposable styrofoam cup, a new one every day, rather than rinsing out your ceramic mug each time with warm water. Think about that. And everybody looked at me like, A, I was lying. I wasn't. And B, that that's just absurd, that I'm no friend of the earth. And I don't think any of those charges are fair. But he pointed that out in the article, that if you're going to go ahead and rinse it out with warm water, in fact, some people, before they recycle a soda can or a bottle of ketchup, will rinse it out with hot water to recycle
it. So they're defeating, they're adding to the trouble.
The carbon footprint gets bigger. I told my friend Carla this one time. I said, you know, Carla, and I knew this wouldn't go well, you're better off to use styrofoam cups because she's a meticulous person. She's detailed and neat. I said, you know, it's better if you just get a styrofoam cup and throw it away rather than rinse out your mug every day. By the way, it takes a lot of energy and water to make that ceramic mug, too, but never mind that. Just the maintaining of it may not be such a good idea. She almost socked me in the nose.
My parents want me to wash out Ziploc bags and reuse them,
yeah,
which is just unbelievable.
We have tried that before. The thing's never
but
dry.
But you're wasting more money on the Dawn dish soap to wash that out.
And the hot water.
It's 100 bags for $1 at the dollar store.
It is not.
Yes, it is.
Not 100. Ziploc.
Well, okay.
I get your point,
Violetta. Would you like a Kleenex?
I get your point.
I rinse my bags.
Well, here's
all of them?
Well, no, if I put something in there like salad
onions
or something, or, you know, I'll reuse it.
You know what they also say, though, Steve, that the bacteria in there, it's not worth it. You're not rinsing out all the bacteria. And when you reuse one of those bags, you're actually putting yourself in more in harm's way than is worth it.
I really don't like you today.
I know. I hate this about me. I'm such a contrarian, such
no,
a smarty
pants. We talked about this a lot after we left your house because it's really challenges a lot of what you think. Didn't you say one about flying cross country?
No, that's what Mark Baser said. So Baser says, well, yeah, in fact, that's not how he talks, but he said that when you fly across country, the emissions from your jet is equivalent to 1 year's worth of not recycling or something like that. By the way, I looked that up, and what I found was this, that when you're, say you're going to go from here to San Francisco, and you can fly, which is a bunch of people communally flying together, or you can drive, but now you're going to use a lot of gasoline just for you and your family along the way. They said that while it's close, it's environmentally better to drive than to fly.
This came up on the Biz Lunch a while ago. If you use a cloth bag,
yeah,
at the grocery store,
yeah,
you have to use it something like 100 times before it starts to make an impact.
Really? Are you kidding me?
Because of the materials and what it takes to make it and all of that.
Yeah, right. And then you've off, yeah, and then I forget it in my house anyway, you know. Plus, do you go through this little moral crisis every time you go to the Whole Foods or the Jewels? They say, do you want to donate your bag charge to the needy or to a local school? It's 7 cents. And you think, well, I've got 7 cents. But then why the hell am I carrying these bags around with me all the time? So, and it seems so cheap to say, no, I have $100 worth of groceries here, but don't give 7 cents to the children. So of course you say, oh, I'll give 7 cents to the children. But then you just feel like you've been had. Every now and then, just to make me feel like I'm a person on the planet, I say, no, I'm keeping the 7 cents. And they don't judge. Not to my face, but I know they go home and they'll go, hey, honey, how was work today? Well, it was good, but there was this guy. Here are the three items. Paper, cardboard, and aluminum and soda cans. After that, it doesn't make much sense. The glass, so notice what's not on the list. Compost, food scraps, glass bottles, metal cans, stuff like that. Paper and cardboard and aluminum found in soda cans. Recycle those. After that, it doesn't much matter. Now, granted, that's a lot of the things that you're going to maybe put out for recycling anyway. Plastic bags, not on there. Plastic jars or bottles, not on there. Paper, cardboard, aluminum, and metal as in soda cans. This is from The Reign of Recycling. The article was written in 2015. It was a follow-up to an article John Tierney wrote in 1996. So he's kind of been fighting or following this. In 96, he wrote, "Recycling is garbage." Then a few years ago, he wrote The Reign of Recycling. I reached out to him today and said, "Hey, what about plastic straws and paper straws? Where are you in that, big boy?" Haven't heard from him, but I thought I would at least update you on that thought while we were having it. Joe wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Good. Getting back to the first subject you brought up about the city of Chicago and too many festivals.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know as a suburbanite, it is a pain in the butt to go to downtown Chicago.
Why?
You got the 90-minute commute, and you got the $70 parking, and then if you want to go anywhere that's not in walking distance to your parking,
yeah,
you got an Uber. And it's a tough way to have a good time.
I completely sympathize with that. And it's a shame, too, because, like, I used to live in LaGrange Park, walk to train. We was easy to get to work every day. But still, as close as you are to Chicago, if you're listening to us in LaGrange Park where I used to live, it's a hassle to come in on the Eisenhower. Where do you park? I used to drive by Lakeshore Drive all the time and think, wow, look at those people having fun. How did they get there? I never knew the answer to that.
You're right. And, you know, Chicago, the Chicagoland area is over 10,000 square miles. And a city like Nashville is only about 600 square miles. So, you know, you could be a big city and have a lot of the great things that a big city has without a lot of the inconvenience. Now, I don't know how to undo that, but I think that's where we are.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point you make. And maybe the solution would be that on weekends, they should have free parking or discounted parking or find a way to make it at least less expensive for you to park if you can find a place to do that. What do you think of that?
That would help. That would help.
It doesn't seem to be stopping the people that are coming down here,
right,
though.
No. Nobody comes downtown. You can't find a place to park. Oh, wait a minute.
That's because it's busy.
I imagine a whole bunch of people maybe aren't having the commute from the suburbs. Maybe that's why people have moved back into the city, and then you have the tourists. You know, when I was a kid growing up, there wasn't really tourists downtown, but there sure are now.
Okay, I mean, no offense by this, but I feel like you don't really want to come down that badly.
I mean, but it's terrible. You know, it's a buzzkill.
Yeah. Well, I think it's in that, like, do you want to come down for $1,000? No, I wouldn't come down for $1,000. Would you come down for free? Sure, I'd come down for free. Okay, where's your paying threshold? And for him, 90 minutes and $70 is on the wrong side. So I think I don't know how we're going to make the commute easier. Good Lord. You know, there's just too many rats in the cage here. But then after that, we could at least make it more affordable or find some easier way to accommodate these people to park when they get into the city. And it's not just people in the suburbs. I got folks listening to us in Peoria now, and they're like, it's too much of a hassle. I'm not going to come to Chicago. And I think it's a shame because this is one of the world's great cities. Literally, you notice how when we start the show, I brag that we're above the Chicago River. It's because I watch tour boats just go up and down the Chicago River below us. It's a great thing to do. I want that for you. And I know you're just thinking, if you could heliport me in there, if you could drone drop me in there, it'd be great. But how do I do that? I don't know the answer to that question. Okay, so I know. When I get to be king,
and so it rang,
stand by,
loud and clear,
here comes
across
one,
across the land,
yep.
Quoth King John,
it's good to be king.
When I get to be king, write this down,
just for a while.
And the paperwork hasn't gone through Cook County yet, but when it does, when I get to be king, parking will be free. Low for all of the people in the meters and decks of Chicagoland, so be it. What do you think of that?
What?
Okay. I may need to run that to the committee. I'm not exactly sure. Just want to clear up a couple of things. Some texts that have come in. We, in the last hour, half hour, spoke a little bit about environmentalism and should you throw away certain things or not, you know, paper or plastic. We talked about how to do the city. Somebody said, John, spot hero, parking is reasonable and accessible when you come into Chicago. John, just take public transportation. Two good pieces of advice. John, I rinse out styrofoam cups and reuse them. See, I'm not sure if that's terrific or not terrific, because now you're not only using the warm water, but you've got the styrofoam cup.
That's the worst possible. That's a double negative.
And I think this person's thinking, no, I'll show them. I'll take the environmentally friendly styrofoam cup and I'll use it over and over again with hot water rinsed out. So I'm not sure if you're helping or hurting there.
Bless your heart. You're trying your best.
I know. That is such a me thing. John, we moved to Dallas for business reasons. My adult daughter is always telling me here about all the great festivals in Chicago. She tells her friends that you don't have to search for entertainment when you come to Chicago. It'll find you. We miss those festivals.
I didn't hear that. Were you complaining about the city festivals?
I think we're over-festivaled.
I think you can't say we yet.
I have to say I completely disagree.
Yeah.
Because we have, 10 months of winter, and then, thank God, finally we get to enjoy the summer. So every weekend there's something fun for you to do.
Also, Aleph, you know better than me, but they end now, right? I mean, it used to be in August. They end at the end of July, pretty much.
The festivals, you mean, generally speaking?
The street ones, maybe, but not really like the music festivals.
No, but the street festivals.
Oh, the neighborhood festivals, you mean? Stuff like that?
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Taste has come and gone, and Lala will have come and gone. Pitchfork will have come and gone. But it just seems to me like every weekend that I'm driving around downtown or trying to do something on Lakeshore Drive or I'm trying to get across Michigan Avenue or Columbus.
Wait, why don't you?
You are one of those. You've become one of those people in a year.
CTA, three letters.
Why don't you go to some of these fests?
This is you complaining about, not that you do this, but people who in the old days moved next to Wrigley Field and complained about the lights.
Oh, he brought that up earlier.
John.
This texter says, yep, John, the city needs to tune it down a little bit on all of the stuff that goes on. I worked in Grant Park for 30 years in an emergency department south of the park, and because of the masses there, we were always ramping up staff to take care of the drunks and the druggies and the persons who take no responsibility for themselves. I hated summer, says Thomas. Or says Mike. Thank you, Mike, for the email.
I think that was his job, though.
I know.
He's now retired and enjoying a happy life because of the drunks.
Once again, I just want to note that it's now 1:42 and we've spoken nothing about politics today. We do not ignore it. Steve's been covering the scene in Washington in the news.
And things have still gotten heated here, but just about street festivals.
Street festivals and paper straws.
Yes or no.
You think we're a little hostile these days? And then if you suffer from politosis, oh, Lord, your life's really difficult.
All this political talk has been really stressing me out lately. My doctor said maybe I should cut down on my social media.
Recent research shows 8 out of 9 Americans consume 75% more of 89% of the media 96% of the time, and the other 4% of the time, whatever.
I'd get anxious when I wasn't connected. But when I did connect, it only made things worse.
That's a case of politosis, that sick feeling you get from people talking about the president and, well, basically the president.
Then my doctor recommended Urelium Life 9000.
Try Urelium Life 9000 and now Urelium Light 4500.
Thanks to Urelium Life 9000, I can watch my phone 100 hours a day, a million days a week.
Handcrafted by serious people in lab coats, Urelium Life 9000 is the all-natural wonder drug that will perk you up, calm you down, brighten your smile, quicken your step, and make you more regular than a village of German clockmakers.
Oh, you can set a watch to me now.
But we won't.
I'm not kidding.
We aren't either. Urelium Life 9000 stops politosis in its tracks. Take it as a pill, capsule, gel cap, liquid, ointment, aerosol, time-release arm patch, eye drop, ear burst, nasal mist, salcha briquette, and if you're one of the first 5,000 customers, you could win a weekend stay for three in a tropical paradise like Hawaii or the Holiday Inn in East Peoria.
Now I'm connected, calm, and politosis-free.
Your Urelium Travel Getaway does not include airfare transfers, hotel stays, car rental, meals, beverages, or taxes, or that magazine you bought at the airport. Always, always, always follow label directions. Close cover before striking. NLMS ID number 23, Skidoo, yabba-dabba-doo.
So if you suffer from politosis, just make sure you pick up some of that Urelium Life 9000. You see the story on page 2 of the Sun-Times today? Sushi joint stung by Aloha claim? Okay, I didn't really pay any attention to this when it first came out because I thought, well, who cares about Aloha Poke? But that's a Chicago-based company. I didn't know that. Aloha Poke is a company, and you go there and you get some poke. And it's that Hawaiian whatever. And they put the name Aloha on there because, well, nothing says Hawaii more than that. So Aloha Poke seems to be a pretty good name for your poke company. Problem is, a lot of people in the world sell poke, and a lot of them put the word Aloha in front of it. So now they're sending out cease and desist letters to mom-and-pop shops in Hawaii and in California and in Illinois, and they're saying, hey, we don't want you to use Aloha anymore. And it's almost like saying we've trademarked hello, and what a terrible thing to do. That's the way it's playing out on social media. Even the guy who no longer works for the company but founded it is like, I'm getting terrible things from social media. They're not accurate, and we're just sick about this. You know, if you're going to do that, you need to anticipate, like, even if you're in the legal right, if you say, Aloha Poke is the name of our company, we've trademarked it. If you say, I'm Orlando Aloha Poke, we're going to send you a cease and desist letter because that's our company, Aloha Poke, and you can't, any more than you can say, Joe's McDonald's Hamburger Shop, they will sue you for that. The Disney Corporation averages one lawsuit per day. You just have to keep fighting that good fight. So there's Aloha Poke continually pokeing people's little balloons when they see their name on there. And you kind of don't blame them, but doggone it, it looks like you're saying, we own Aloha. We own the name Aloha. Now, some of the people that have gotten the cease and desist letters say, it's more Aloha than Aloha Poke. That is, if I wanted to say I'm Aloha Surfboards or I'm Aloha Sushi, they're also telling me not to use the word Aloha. And therein lies the argument between some of these.
I've been saying Pokey.
You've been saying, I know.
So I was like, what are we talking about?
You're wrong out of the gate. Yeah, I don't. I know. Is it Pokey or Poke or Poke?
Poke.
I think it's Poke.
You're the guy who lived there.
Yeah, I did, but I said Aloha, and I never said Poke. Yeah, for 4 years I lived there, so I knew a little bit about Hawaiian culture, and people do say Aloha in passing. And if you said, hey, you can't say Aloha or use that in the name of your business, they would flip out. It looks really bad. The headline is, Sushi Joints Stung by Aloha Claim. And that's in the story that's trying to make it better for them. So I don't know what the best strategy for this company is. You've got to protect the name of your company, you know, your business, right? If other Aloha Poke start to poke up all around the world, then and they're not as good, or they're trading off of your advertising, then, you know, that's wrong. That's why you trademark things. But I would be reticent to be sympathetic with somebody. I'm not sure I said reticent right, by the way, who is trademarking the word Aloha. Generally, I think a lot of us see certain words and phrases as part of general speech, and we don't like the idea of you owning it anyway, right? So if Pat Riley, one-time coach of the Los Angeles Lakers and Orlando, if he trademarked... He trademarked three-peat when the Bulls were going for the third consecutive victory and they were playing, was it Miami or Orlando? Miami, when they were playing his team, he owned the rights to the phrase three-peat, which the Bulls would have if they won the series against his team. I thought that was a terrible conflict of interest. He wants to win. But if he loses and the Bulls three-peat against him, then he cashes in because he owned three-peat. He got in front of that. You can't own three-peat, but he did.
Yeah, Taylor Swift did the same thing. A lot of her catchphrases from the 1989 album are copyrighted to her. Like, this sick beat.
Wait, say that again? This sick beat?
Yeah, you know, part of... It's in a song.
Yeah, no, but that phrase or that sentence, that's a phrase, this sick beat, she owns that?
She owns it. Because we never go out of style also. Copyrighted.
Really? How could you own that? That's a simple enough. I would randomly come upon that sentence, right? I'm going to open up a store called This Sick Beat Aloha Poke and see what happens.
It could be selling sushi and guitars.
Exactly. I'm trying to think of some other ones where the, you know, phrase I think should be in the general public, but it is not. It is 149. Oh, listen, here's something else I want you to do. I'll break here and come back in 60 seconds. But speaking of things to do in Chicago, festivals and whatnot, this thing that we're going to do August 12th, you know, this walk that we're going to do along the lake is fantastic. And you cannot believe the deal that you get if you do it. So mark your calendar and get ready to do what I'm about to tell you to do in a minute.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have
to. I believe it was our president.
Here's John Williams.
Who said, don't believe what you're seeing and hearing. I meant 81.
I thought that was George Orwell.
Hey, it's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're 18 stories above the Chicago River, overlooking beautiful Chicago and Lake Michigan. We're here until 3. Weekdays 1 to 3, and then on Saturdays, I'm here from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. On social media, I'm WGN King John. Elif, throw up a flare when we get the Facebook, on my Facebook page, the information for the American Lung Association walk. Is that up there already?
No. I was going to say something else.
Oh, and I got to mention the news click too, right? All right. Well, let's update them on the news click at the bottom of this hour. That's also on my Facebook page and at WGNradio.com. The question we've had up there is, should Chicago police officers be required to document every time they point their guns at someone? I'm surprised at the response on this. Should Chicago police officers be required to document every time they point their guns at someone? The results of that at the bottom of the hour. Speaking of the city of Chicago, so here in the city, hold on, I'm going to turn my pages here to make sure I get my setup right. Here it is. Here in Chicago, ProPublica and WBEZ did a story about the parking violations and city stickers. Melissa Sanchez is a reporter at ProPublica Illinois, and she joins us on WGN Radio. Melissa, nice to meet you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So ProPublica is reporting what about stickers and tickets?
Okay, so we've spent close to the past year looking at how Chicago ticketing practices have been driving tens or thousands of people into debt, disproportionately Black folks. And in this story that we published last week with my friend Elliot Ramos at WBEZ, we focused on Chicago City sticker ticket. So that's a $200 ticket that you can get if you are found without having a city sticker on your windshield. They're between $90 and $130 a pop.
So we're not talking about red light violators. We're not talking about double parkers here per se, or people that are in expired meters. There's a lot of sins on the roads. This is just about the stickers?
It's about the sticker. So that's essentially a tax violation. Because it's, you know, the city sticker is called the wheel tax. And so this is, you did not pay the tax, you did not have a sticker, you get a $200 citation.
How do they know that your vehicle is or isn't a resident of Chicago and therefore needs the sticker?
That's a good question. They look up the plates. And so if the plate is registered in
sure
the city.
They do. Really? Because I know somebody who doesn't have their sticker yet. And if the cops just randomly run their plates, they'll turn the cherries on and write you a ticket right there?
Depends on what part of the city you live in.
Oh, that's interesting. What do you mean by that?
So police are doing the bulk of the ticketing in Chicago's West and South Side. And when I say West and South Side, I mean Black Chicago. Police don't do so much ticketing in White Chicago or Latino Chicago. That's more left up to Chicago's finance department, the so-called parking meter maids. They're actually called parking enforcement aides. And what we saw is that there are a lot more tickets being issued in Black Chicago, and that's a disparity that's driven by police. And when I say a lot more, it's not the count. It's not a really good way of looking at this, but we did per capita, so per household, the rates of ticketing in some parts of Chicago, like West Englewood, West Garfield Park, are 10 times higher than what you see in white neighborhoods, like Forest Glen, or where a lot of police officers happen to live.
And you said that this is driving some people to bankruptcy?
Yeah. So for the past several months, we've been writing about this. Chicago is unique among all American cities in the number of people that had sent into bankruptcy over ticket debt. Last year, I think last year or the year before, something like 10,000 people filed for Chapter 13 bankruptcy, at least in part to deal with tickets. That's 10,000 out of 20,000 Chapter 13 filings in the city, in the Northern District of Illinois.
Okay, that's stunning. But I would argue that it's not the ticket. The ticket was just one of the straws.
Yes and no. It's a really good question. The tickets, if you get enough tickets, then there's consequences. The consequences are if you get two or three tickets, you can lose your card at the boot. If you get 5 to 10 tickets, depending on the kind of ticket, and don't pay them, then the city can ask the state to suspend your license. These two things, losing your car and license, are the specific things that are driving folks into bankruptcy. Because
now you've
bankruptcy,
lost income. Now you can't keep a job.
Right. You can't pay your debt. And so filing for bankruptcy gives you a legal protection, what's called an automatic stay, that allows you to keep your car, keep your license. And so people are literally filing for bankruptcy just to do one of those two things. So it is true that it could be a straw on a very, you know, large camel's back where they have other debts and other problems. But these two things are the triggers that are really, you know, pushing people over the edge.
What is the first offense cost? In Chicago, is it $200?
For a city sticker ticket, it's $200.
And how does that compare to other cities?
Other cities don't have city sticker tickets because they don't have city stickers.
Why does Chicago have city stickers?
It's a thing that started about 100 years ago when automated vehicles got on the road, and they were saying that they were causing more damage in the horse and buggy. The money is used to help fix roads.
That seems to be reasonable. The people that drive on the roads should pay to fix the roads. It's a user fee. And so I guess then the only question is, what's a reasonable amount to charge for that? They just recently raised the sticker fee, right?
They raised the sticker fee a little bit. So that's what our story was about last week. At the end of 2011, for the 2012 budget, the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, wanted to raise the cost of the city sticker for larger vehicles by a pretty significant amount. The clerk at the time, Susana Mendoza, pushed back and said, we don't want to hurt soccer moms, you know, people with big vehicles. Why don't we go after scofflaws instead? So instead of a significant bump to that user fee, the city sticker, which some would argue is regressive already, they raised the cost for the citations.
For the people that don't pay.
From $120 to $200.
Okay, so $200 is if you don't have a sticker and they catch you. What does the sticker cost up front?
It depends on the size of the vehicle. It's between about $90 and $130 a year.
Okay. So $100 to get it, and then $200 if you don't have it.
Plus a late fee if you get it late. That's $60. And then plus if you get it late, then they backdate your sticker. And then if you don't pay your sticker ticket on time, then it doubles, plus collection fees. It turns into $488.
You guys said that people generally don't pay these fines, though, right?
Yeah, it's one of the things.
I get it. If I don't have $100 for the sticker, maybe I'm lazy, maybe I'm broke, maybe I'm angry. I'm sure going to be angry when I get a ticket for it. And people say, screw it. You guys said debt from this one type of ticket swelled, compounded by late penalties and collection fees. Collectively, you wrote, drivers now owe the city some $275 million for sticker tickets issued since 2012.
Right, when they raised the cost from $120 to $200.
We owe the city a quarter of a billion dollars that one thing alone.
It's the citation, the kind of ticket for which there is the most debt on the books. And so I've been writing about this for close to a year now, and you know, the city says it's owed like $1.5 billion in unpaid tickets, and this is the number one kind of ticket.
And would you say, though, that $1 billion is disproportionately shouldered by the poor and the minorities on the West and South Side?
Yes.
What do you say to the people that say, well, I got an idea? Get the city ticket.
The sticker,
and then pay your tickets on time.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with that, but then when you see numbers like this, it's the problem is there's a hell of a lot more policing on the West and South Side. And so you have wealthier, more affluent people who are white, who can park their cars and safely be scofflaws from the city. I have a garage. I don't have to buy a city sticker because my car is not as exposed to, you know, to police as they would be if I lived in an apartment in Austin where,
right,
I didn't have access to a garage. So I get what you're saying, but there's a problem that the city has to recognize that there's a problem when they're driving 10 10,000 people into bankruptcy. Like, we have to, like, assess that system and see if it makes sense.
What does the city or the mayor say about
nothing, that? Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They say the fault of the bankruptcy, as far as they can tell, is that there's bankruptcy attorneys who are out, you know, trying to get poor people. And that might be true. And, like, I've written about that. I've written about how the bankruptcy firms are making a lot of money off of this. But it starts something like, what's the, you know, the chicken and the egg question?
I mean, the
debt comes from somewhere. The debt's coming from the city of Chicago with these huge fines that grow. I mean, and then we had a story a couple of weeks ago about how not only is the city, like, over ticketing in certain parts of Chicago, they're actually issuing the same person multiple $200 tickets in the same day, and the city's refusing to do anything about it.
On the same day,
and that seems to go against the ordinance. But these folks keep the city, like, they're having their attorneys, like, look at the ordinance to see, are we allowed to issue infinite numbers of tickets to the same car in the same day? We still have gotten no answer. So what is the city doing? Nothing.
Melissa Sanchez is in our studio from ProPublica. And they wrote about this on the great ProPublica site. The article I have in front of me is titled, actually, I don't see the title. What's the title of the article?
I don't even remember.
I'll look it up here in a second. I see lots of
text. I can tell you in a sec. No. What did we call it? Chicago hiked the cost of vehicle city sticker violations to boost revenue, but it's driven more low-income black motorists into debt.
Yeah, you guys got to work on that. We have very long headlines.
These investigations, we're calling it driven into debt, where we've done a lot of stories
on
debt.
That's the line I see, driven into debt. I didn't know if that was the whole article title or not, driven into debt, if you're searching on ProPublica. But here's the thing. If you then are a poor person in Chicago, and maybe that's the driving factor here, they may live on the South and West Side. I don't know if this is racial as much as it's economic. But here's what happens in Chicago. If you are a person who's living in a lower income neighborhood, if you have a less than average cost of your house, you are almost certainly going to be paying too much in property taxes. If you ride a bicycle in Chicago on the South or West Side, you have a disproportionately high probability of, according to Mary Wisniewski at the Tribune when she wrote about this last year, you're more likely to get a ticket for doing something wrong on your bicycle in Chicago if you're black and riding it on the South or West Side than if you are not. So bicycle riders, too bad for the poor. Property owners, business owners, too bad for the poor.
Car insurance, it's more expensive if you live in a black or brown neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, they prorate it that way?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and in this case, it seems to be, is it technically legal or technically fair what we're talking about, the city sticker story? I mean, is anybody saying that the city of Chicago is breaking its own law or doing something wrong?
Well, legally, I don't know. There's one lawyer, the guy who was behind the big red light camera lawsuits, who's now suing the city. There's a state law that caps the amount that cities can charge and penalties for vehicle violations at $250. That's the original penalty plus late fees. Chicago's city sticker ticket ultimately can cost you $488. But Chicago's defense to this is home rule. So we don't know how that's going to play out. That suit was just filed a few weeks ago.
Okay. Some cities do have stickers. Rolling Meadows has a city sticker. John Palatine has stickers. I don't know if we said that Chicago is the only city that has stickers.
Nationally, it's of the top 15 biggest cities. Nobody else has one.
New York doesn't do this. LA doesn't do this. Philly doesn't do this.
Some cities have a tax that might get tacked on when you register your plates at the state level, but you don't have to go into like some city office to get a sticker.
Okay, let's do this. We'll pause. I have two pages of text messages just handed to me. You may want to call, too. Either way, text or call 312-981-7200. This is WGN. We're talking about the ProPublica story. Teresa Sanchez is in our studio. I'm sorry, Melissa Sanchez is in our studio, reporter at ProPublica, Illinois. If you search ProPublica, do you have to type in Illinois to find your story?
No, just ProPublica.org.
And you'll find the reporting there about driven to debt. Driven to debt, people in the city of Chicago whose debt piles up one cut at a time, suddenly it's 1,000 and you can't do it anymore. And so literally thousands of people in the city are filing for bankruptcy if for no other reason to keep their license and car. I mean, that's the thing I was talking about. It's $200, but if you don't have use of your car, then you've just lost your job. So it's more than just a city sticker violation. Really, the city's cutting off its nose to spite its face. You want to keep these people employed. You want them paying taxes. For $200, you're going to go ahead and maybe economically make it even harder on yourself if you're the city, right?
That's what I keep saying, and I don't know if that makes any sense to some folks.
You seem distraught about this.
I mean, the more I learn, just the more people I talk with who tell me. I mean, I just talked to a woman the other night who was trying to get a job as a CTA bus driver. And she can't because of tickets, because she's about to lose her license and the city doesn't want any scoff laws on their payroll. It's, I don't know.
But can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
What do you say to people's response that might say, well, why do they get those tickets in the first place? Could it be that people downtown just buy their city stickers and that's why they're not getting those tickets? Or, you know, why are they getting five tickets in a row?
I got a page of texts that are saying stuff like that.
Yeah, no, and that's a really fair question, and something that we tried to answer with the data, and we were only partially successful, in part because there's no data on who doesn't buy stickers. Like, I can't survey, you know, the whole city and figure that out. So the best we got was from the clerk's office of sticker sales by zip code, and they wouldn't give it to us in any other format, and whether the sticker sales included a late penalty. And so that would indicate to me that if, you know, you had to pay a late penalty with your sticker, that for at least a point in time you were a scofflaw, so you were, you know, one of these people.
Right.
And so there was slightly more late penalties as a portion of the total sticker sales in some of these west and south side neighborhoods, but it's not a really complete story, because a lot of folks are just not buying their stickers to begin with, including people who can park their cars in garages and just avoid the whole thing.
Right, because I don't have my sticker yet.
And do you live in the city?
I live in the city. I park in a garage.
Okay, so I think there's a lot of cases like that that we cannot account for. So when I tell you, yeah, there might be more so-called scofflaws in the West and South Side, like, we don't actually have the data to know. And we've heard anecdotally from a lot of folks like you who are white and who park their cars in garages and who've never bought a sticker and they've never gotten ticketed.
And have a less chance of getting one because my car can hide at night.
Exactly.
I've gotten a ticket 2 years in a row.
For that reason.
Yeah, because I always forget to get it, but they catch me.
Yeah, but you also have income, right? So
that's
it's
true.
Easier for you to pay a $200 ticket.
And then another thing that we found is that folks who get tickets in white neighborhoods are more likely to contest the tickets and get them dismissed. If you're Latino, I mean, this is kind of a different race thing. Latinos are a lot less likely to contest, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out why that might be. There's like a whole like quasi-judicial process that's difficult to enter and complicated if you, one, don't speak the language, if two, like, you may not have immigration status. Like, it's confusing. And so I think what I'm trying to say is, like, yeah, there's people on the South and West Side who are not buying their stickers, and okay, that's a problem, right? But at the same time, like, the cards are not stacked. I mean, the cards are stacked against folks, and income, race,
okay,
is
so
part
of it. I've got so many texts and so many calls about this. What do you think? Do you have a prescription here?
I mean, yeah, I think the city needs to look at it. I think the city needs to acknowledge that there's
a
problem.
That's not a prescription. I'm asking you, do you have a suggestion for what we should do in Chicago about this?
I mean, no, I'm being serious. I think the city could do an analysis of what's happening with ticketing. Like, does it make sense to charge this much for a ticket when only one in three people are paying for it?
That's the point I neglected to mention. So while we owe in this city over $250 million to the city for this category alone, how many are getting paid? One in three, maybe, are actually being paid?
Yeah, within a year, one in three. And then, you know, in context, right? So other tickets, when you think of parking tickets, you think of, like, overstaying your meter or street cleaning tickets. The portion of those tickets that get paid is like 70 or 80% in a year. So it's significantly higher. What's one of the differences? The price. The cost of those tickets is like $60. $60, $200, huge difference if you're somebody making like $400 a week.
You can read it at ProPublica.com, or ProPublica Illinois is what you're searching for when you look for this story by Melissa Sanchez and their colleagues over at WBEZ. Melissa, come back. Nice
to
meet you. Congratulations on what is another brilliant piece from those brilliant people at ProPublica. Steve, all I can see is red cars now. Somebody says, hey, look, there's a red car, and then you see red cars everywhere. It was brought to my attention that a lot of successful internet and media companies have two O's in them. After reading the story about Goop, Gwyneth Paltrow's company, I thought, oh, there is some truth to that. You've got Goop, Yahoo, Google, Facebook. Elif just pointed out Zoom, which is a sponsor here. Amazon. I still think that's funny. But if there's any other 00 companies that I'm missing, let me know. By the way, speaking of Elif, what is the news click and what are the results of our daily web poll question, please?
Should Chicago police officers be required to document every time they point their guns at someone?
Mm.
No, 53%. Yes, 47%.
That's about as close as we get on that. So 53-47, you were even on, is it reasonable to expect the cops to have a paper trail every time they pull their gun on somebody? That's dividing the city, that's for sure. By the way, joining us now on WGN Radio, Ali Rogan joins us from, I guess, Washington, D.C., the ABC correspondent that's been covering this Manafort jury selection process. Ali, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Do I have you in Washington, D.C. correctly?
You sure do. Yes, I am. I'm not at the courthouse, which is in Alexandria, Virginia. I am ensconced in my lovely office here in downtown D.C.
So jury selection, I guess like any jury selection, they'll ask them some questions and each side will try and pick out the most sympathetic people?
Yeah, exactly. They sped through this, though. I'd say the only difference between this and your standard jury selection is I believe this one went very fast. They don't call this guy the rocket docket for nothing, Judge the judge T.S. Ellis in this case. They asked questions. Ellis actually, interestingly, asked the question, how many folks in this room on the jury selection know someone who works at the Department of Justice? Now, Alexandria, Virginia is where a lot of federal government workers live, and so 8 of them raised their hand.
Why would that be prejudicial in a Manafort case?
That's a great question. What they're getting at is the Department of Justice is the umbrella organization under which Special Counsel Paul Manafort is operating, and Manafort is the one who actually, he's the prosecutor in this case. What's so interesting about this case?
Mueller or Manafort?
Mueller, did I say Manafort?
Yeah. I was going to say no.
Nope. Other way around. So Special Counsel Bob Mueller, this is the first case that Mueller has brought to trial as a result of his investigation into Russia. And no, it is not directly related to Russia, but essentially because the money that Manafort is accused of laundering came from Ukrainian politicians that he was consulting for, that was enough of a connection to Russia to allow Mueller the leeway to bring this case to fruition.
Is that unusual, though? Because I would understand if you're too close to the defendant or maybe a witness, but the prosecutor is actually the person that they're sort of red flagging here, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but and I don't have a great legal background, but I would imagine, just based on common sense, that if you're a juror and you're friends with someone who works for the Department of Justice, you may be having conversations that express some strong views one way or the other. So I think that was what they were getting towards with those specific questions. But the jury has been seated, 6 men, 6 women.
Do you know anything else about the sort of breakdown of them? Are they black? Are they old? Are they white? Are they tall? Are they short?
The only other thing we know, and not being in the courtroom myself, it's hard to say, they are predominantly white. We do know that. There are also 4 alternates who we don't know much about their background. We know that Manafort himself gave them a sort of a grimace almost when he was introduced to them. And we're going to get going with opening statements. They may be in them as soon as right now.
18 different counts against him, right?
That's right. There are 18 different counts, and these are, again, related to bank fraud and tax fraud. So first, Manafort got millions of dollars from the Ukrainian political parties that he was consulting for, and he kept them in offshore bank accounts, which you're not allowed to do because that means you're avoiding paying taxes. He went through a lot of hoops to access that money and go on spending sprees. Some of the highlights include $1 million that he spent in one sitting at a men's clothing store. After that money ran out, apparently, he then went through and committed a large amount of bank fraud to essentially what prosecutors say is his attempts to fuel his lavish lifestyle that he had grown accustomed to living. So you're dealing with two sort of separate but related violations, none of which, again, are directly related to Russia, but came about as Mueller was conducting his Russia investigation.
There are some folks who are speculating that he might cut a deal at the last minute. I guess that ship has sailed now, huh?
Well, not necessarily, and this is kind of the key thing that I think a lot of folks are going to be looking for. Manafort has, as of yet, asserted his not his innocence, even as his partner, Rick Gates, who's actually going to be testifying against him. Rick Gates pled guilty and has been cooperating with prosecutors in the broader Russia investigation. So up until this point, Manafort has not felt, I suppose, the need to cut a plea deal. He wants to go through with this. But look, he's in solitary confinement. This case could go on at least for several more weeks. And one of the things we're looking for is to see if he does end up striking a plea deal that would allow him to avoid this trial, but then he would likely, in order to make that deal, he'd have to agree to be a cooperating witness in the Russia investigation. That could potentially lead to more clues and more detail in terms of the Trump campaign's alleged collusion. Manafort was one of the people in that infamous Trump Tower meeting that we talk about so much. So far he has held out, but that's certainly one of the things that we're looking for in this trial.
To your knowledge, Ali, did they ask the jurors their feelings about the president?
I don't think that came up in either the pre-trial questionnaire, or I actually think that was expressly prohibited by Judge Ellis because he wanted to make clear that this is not a political case. The president is not on trial, and he wants to remove all aspects of this case, including the mindset of the jurors, from the presidential election.
And now that you mentioned, I do think I heard a headline on this radio station today, like they're banning the T word. But and to be honest with you, I think that's, I don't know how realistic that is. I guess it's a good target. But I think I would be hard-pressed to be fair to a Paul Manafort, you know, if Paul Manafort was being charged with a crime and I was on the jury, knowing what I know about who he is and who he represented, I know I should be better than this, but I'm just telling you, I think it would be difficult for me to be completely impartial to a guy who ran the Trump campaign for a while. That's a burden for me.
Absolutely, John. I mean, the Manafort name is synonymous with Trump. So, okay, you're not saying the word Trump, but this man's picture, I have TV monitors on in the background, and you don't go far without seeing Manafort without also seeing Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you can decouple. I don't know how much not saying the word Trump is going to convince these jurors not to think of him.
Last question, then. So suppose the suppose Mueller wins on this, or the prosecutors win. Mueller isn't prosecuting this case, per se. He's not trying it in the courtroom.
He's not in the courtroom, correct.
But, I mean, then what would that mean to Donald Trump? What would that mean to meddling or collusion if that's ultimately what Mueller is looking into? I wonder how this translates to that.
You know, that's a great question. And to be honest, John, I'm not sure what the answer is. I don't know. You know, the Mueller team has made it very clear that they are only seeking justice, as it were, as relates to the charges of tax and bank fraud. So if this case were to go forward and, you know, we can only speculate as to the result, I really don't know what that would mean for Paul Manafort. Does he get a jail sentence, and is he then let off the hook in terms of being a cooperating witness? They have sought to draw the distinction between this case and the Russia investigation. So if he were to be found guilty, for example, I don't know how they could use that the Russia investigation.
Well, the most intriguing notion would be that he cuts a deal because he said, okay, I'll tell you things that I would not otherwise, because I don't want to spend any more time in solitary confinement. I don't want to be fined zillions of dollars, and I don't want to go to jail. So if he somehow cuts a deal, then maybe indirectly there's a, you know, more of a correlation, more of a connection, but otherwise I'm scratching my head trying to find it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Ali, it's nice to talk to you. Ali Rogan is the ABC News correspondent in D.C. They are in Alexandria, I think you said. That's where the courthouse is.
And the courthouse is there, yes.
We'll continue to follow the story. Thank you for your time this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, I know how you can go to the Adler Planetarium for free and or get half off admission to the Field Museum on August 12th. That's Sunday. That's the day of the American Lung Association Lung Force Walk. And when you walk with us, you're right there. You've already parked there. The walk is at 10 a.m. It takes an hour or two, depending on how far and fast you want to go. Anyway, there you are then. And then now that you're parked, and now that you've done our fun little walk right along Lake Michigan, then you are free to get into the Adler Planetarium, and you have half off the Field Museum. What a great little Sunday that would be for you, your friends, your family. Yeah, that's what we're going to do on August 12th. Do join us. Here's how you sign up and find out more. Lungforce.org/walk, lungforce.org/walk. We've also posted on my Facebook page a few more details about that. Right, Elle, if you put that up there?
I did.
That's on how to sign up for our team or my team, the WGN radio team, right?
Your team, and also if you want to sign up as an individual or make your own team.
I told him, I said, well, listen, we want to do good. Let's fight lung cancer, number one cancer killer, blah, blah, blah. But heck, what if I just wanted to go for the fun of that day? She goes, oh, I would tell people that. In fact, it's free admission to the Adler Planetarium when you're on the list. Do sign up for this. Thomas Jefferson comes to town, speaking of fun things to do, Saturday, August 12th at the College of DuPage. I'll be on stage with him. He and I talk for a little bit, then you get to ask questions, too. Somehow or another, when we were talking, it was either last year or maybe it was the 2016 show, but we were talking about how funny Thomas Jefferson is or is not.
You know, I've read a lot of your letters. 26,000 of them I haven't read. No jokes. You know, I'm just still thinking about what that young man asked.
I have two jokes. One was on purpose and one maybe not. So I have 83 volumes worth of writings. If you cull them, you can find maybe two jokes. I'm not funny. I'm good-humored, I smile, but don't tell me a joke about two revolutionaries walk into a tavern. It's just not going to work for me. So here's my joke. A young man wrote to me when I was retired and said, Mr. Jefferson, there are 155 members of Congress and nothing seems to get done. Do you have any insights? And I wrote back and said, young man, whenever you gather 150 lawyers into one room at one time, nothing good could come of it. After all, these are men who are paid to talk by the hour. I'll be here all week. You know. And then the other joke was maybe it's not even a joke. I wrote Abigail Adams wrote to me from London. I was in Paris, and she said, Mr. Jefferson, how is it that the British invented liberty, but they cannot keep it? Which is actually a very good question. I wrote back and said, Madam, I find that it is the sheer quantity of animal flesh that this people eat which renders them insusceptible of civilization. I find that it is in their gastronomic tracts and not in their churches that they must be reformed. I don't know if that's funny or not, but it was sort of a joke, but it's also true. The British had a dining society in the age of Dr. Johnson whose motto was beef and liberty. That's an oxymoron.
That's Thomas Jefferson. He just goes like that. Somebody asks a question and the things you learn and laugh and feel good about America. If I said August 12th, that's the Lung Force Walk. It's the following weekend, Saturday, August 18th, that will be at the College of DuPage. TJ's appearance sponsored in part by our friends at American Sale. Thank you for that. And if you want to go, and you do, go to WGNradio.com/event. Anna DeVlantis, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you doing?
Just breaking big rocks into little rocks here every day.
We're all trying to do the same thing. Hey, we've got some interesting things coming up on the show today. We've got a new game show we are going to launch called Lala or Sasha.
Okay, I think I'm not exactly sure.
You can guess. We're not telling yet, but what's your guess?
I'm guessing that it's you'll give us the name of a Lala band.
Mm-hmm.
Or what?
Sasha. Lala or Sasha?
Yeah,
Sasha.
But I mean, so what's the Sasha element of it?
That's what you're going to find out if you listen to the program. It's very fun and engaging, and you'll see all about that. Mike Monaco is going to join us to talk about Paul Manafort in court. I know you've been discussing that as well.
Yeah.
We've got top five of five you won't believe. We're giving away a family four-pack of tickets to see the Sox-Yankees during the show tonight.
How do I not have those?
Well, you know, it's just some people might be Sox fans. Some you might even find a few Yankees fans trying to get those particular tickets. But it would be a fun to go to. So for sure. We're also going to be talking to Mike Rogers, former congressman, member of the FBI and Intel Committee. But he is going to weigh in on North Korea, Iran, Russia, the latest there, talking about the evidence that the North Korean missile plan still going strong and some other concerning issues, including the Facebook. Do you see that announcing that they're blocking all of those profiles that some of them have hundreds of thousands of followers? People thought they were following real accounts and they were not. So we're going to talk about that as well. And the 3D guns, another thing. Ben Bradley is going to join us from WGN TV News. Talk about that.
What a show. We'll be listening.
Thank you very much.